Mrs. Stark, Mr. Walsh.
May it please the court, counsel for the government. My name is Adam Walsh. I was appointed to represent Michael Stark, the appellant in the present appeal. I also represented Mr. Stark before the Western District of Wisconsin, Barbara Crabb, presiding. On November 6, 2009, Mr. Stark pled guilty to the single count of the criminal complaint, trafficking in methamphetamines. A pre-sentence investigation was prepared therefrom, which found, amongst other things, that Mr. Stark deserved a two-point increase in the applicable sentencing guidelines for his role in the offense as a manager-supervisor. I filed on his behalf an objection to that, amongst several other grounds of the pre-sentence investigation. At the sentencing hearing, the government presented several witnesses, particularly Ms. Zezza and Mr. Thurs, in furtherance of its argument that Mr. Stark was, in fact, a manager-supervisor. At the close of the sentencing, the court imposed a sentence of 168 months, which was 67 months below the applicable guideline in this particular case of 188 through 235 months. Of course, I was then appointed to represent him on appeal, which he chose to take, arguing that the manager-supervisor characterization was inappropriate in the present case. The facts relating to the manager-supervisor designation, under my understanding, is actually that the government has waived the argument that fronting methamphetamines to Mr. Melnick gave grounds for that characterization, so I won't address that point unless there were any questions. My understanding is that the only argument that remains is whether or not Mr. Stark was, in fact, a manager-supervisor for providing the funds in advance of the trips which Mr. Thurs and Mitch Zezza took from Luck, Wisconsin, to the St. Paul, Minneapolis area in Minnesota in order to obtain methamphetamines, which Mr. Stark would then later sell.
Well, I mean, didn't Mr. Stark ultimately exercise control over both Zezza and Thurs by telling them how much meth to purchase, by supplying the purchase money, and by paying them to make the trips?
Well,
that's a lot of control, isn't it?
I would, of course, politely disagree.
Okay.
I believe that the relationship that was going on here was more of a customer purchaser relationship in this particular instance. It appears that what was going on, and from the testimony that was provided, was Mr. Stark would give a sum to Mr. Thurs and Ms. Zezza. She occasionally apparently would not go on the trips, and that would be then taken to the Minneapolis-St. Paul area where they would purchase as much methamphetamine as their sum would allow. That sum apparently changed, the amount that was purchased apparently changed throughout the process as the prevailing market conditions changed how much meth could be purchased.
So is it your view that he didn't coordinate and supervise their trips?
It is. Mr. Thurs testified that he was the one who knew the contacts in Minneapolis-St. Paul for the purchase of the methamphetamine. Mr. Stark had no idea who those individuals were. And as a result, it's our position that by simply providing the money and doing nothing more, Mr. Stark was doing little more than simply purchasing a good or item from someone.
Well, this is kind of the opposite of fronting, right? Mm.
In essence, it's the exact opposite of fronting.
The customer is putting the money up in advance, but he's also deciding how much, how often, and then the most of the money winds up, the customer here, Mr. Stark, is deciding how much to pay the couriers.
That's exactly right. In essence, he's deciding at what time he wishes to purchase more product.
Can I ask you, Mr. Walsh, one of the things that concerned me is is why, even if the district judge was wrong about this particular adjustment, this it wouldn't have been harmless, since your client wound up with a sentence below the guideline range, regardless of whether the 2 points were assessed or not.
That's fair.
And did anybody ask Judge Crabb to explain the connection between the guideline calculation and the lower sentence? I would understand if you did not want to press the point after your client had gotten a below-guideline sentence.
No, we did not ask.
Okay.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Walsh. Mr. Reinhardt?
Good morning. David Reinhardt for the United States. The standard of review in this case is clear error, and the district court did not clearly err when it applied the two-level upward adjustment. The defendant organized this offense. He decided when the meth would be purchased. He decided how much would be purchased. I mean, he was the one who was exercising the decision-making authority. There's no evidence in the record that the accomplices made any real decision-making or made any real decisions that affected the purchase of the meth.
So is there absolutely no way to view Zeza and Thurse as independent contractors?
Well, I think what's important is that they exclusively got the meth for Stark. They weren't didn't have an independent business. You know, they didn't have other customers who they were getting meth for. So I think when you look at the record and take into account all the facts, that they didn't appear to be independent contractors, that they just knew of this source and Mr. Stark needed meth, and they were able to transport and purchase the meth and then bring it back to him.
It's kind of unusual, though, that the manager supervisor doesn't know who the source is under these circumstances, right?
Well, he certainly, under the facts of this case, he did not have wasn't able to make the contact with the source. But I don't think that automatically would exclude one from being a manager or supervisor, especially when you look at, I think the key here is the decision-making authority, who was making the decisions. And clearly, I think one of the witnesses testified, look, we would have never gone to purchase the meth had it not been for the defendant.
Well, they didn't have the money, presumably,
who, yeah,
right?
Yeah, gave him all of the money. I really think that Mr. Stark was the one who was calling the shots. And he played a greater role than the other two individuals. And that's what the comment to the guideline indicates, that they want to look at the relative responsibility among the individuals involved in the offense. And I think when you look at all the facts in this particular case, that he clearly was the one who played a greater role within this offense.
Mr. Reinhardt, did the government ask Judge Crabb to explain the below-guideline sentence in this case?
Your Honor, we did not. And certainly that would have made our harmless error argument probably a lot stronger. But in this particular case, that was not asked.
Mm-hmm.
If there aren't any further questions, I will sit down.
Mr. Reinhardt, Mr. Walsh, have anything further?
Just very briefly, I just would like to point out for the purposes of the court, which I've already reiterated in the brief, that it seems the initial idea for beginning this relationship between Thurs, Zeza, and Mr. Stark is somewhat hazy. It could have been either Thurs and Zeza's idea.
Whatever the origin, weren't Zeza and Thurs really his agents?
I don't know if you can say that. I view them more as independent contractors. I believe that they had the right at any time, of course, as any other employee would do, to say no, that they'd rather not continue to participate in this activity.
Well, any agent can resign as an agency. Yeah.
This was employment at will.
Certainly. And I admit that, but it appears to me that in reverse fronting process, we appear to be more in an independent contractor state.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Walsh, and we thank you for the appointment, accepting the appointment and your efforts on behalf of your client. And thank Mr. Reinhardt as well.